You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 26th of November, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we are actually broadcasting live today at long last. We managed to get the technology to work, and of course, as we're live, I also have with me Max Musson from Western Spring. Max, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you.
We finally managed to connect. We had a lot of technical issues there at first, but
as we certainly did.
These things, get sent to try us, I think, especially when it's the first time we're experimenting with a live stream. But anyway, we've got what we've really got to discuss tonight is that the main news, which is sort of on everybody's lips, I guess, is Theresa May's Brexit deal. You must have been following this over the weekend, Max. She's been pleading with the British public to get behind it. She's been desperately trying to get the MPs to get behind it. The DUP have said, well, we're not even going to support you anymore. And that was her, majority was thanks to the DUP. The only people that seem to be supporting this deal is the European Union. And each time she says this is with the good of the country in mind, I'm certain she just means this is the good with the European Union in mind. What have you got to make of all this that's going on at the moment, Max?
Well, when we could see how during the early period of negotiations that she had with the European Union, that they were quite sort of gleefully predicting that how they were going to punish the UK for having the temerity to want to leave the European Union. The fact that the European Union negotiators and leaders are now praising the deal that she's made lets you know straight away that she's effectively caved in on just about everything that she possibly could cave in on, and that the deal is heavily loaded in favour of the European Union and not actually in the best interest of our people. I think that, right from the very start, it was obvious that there was going to be a very sort of negative attitude from the European Union and from any negotiator that they nominated. And we should have just put them under pressure by declaring that we were going to leave the European Union with 3 months' notice. And they would have been falling over themselves to negotiate with us if we just turned away and then just started to make preparations for a free trade Brexit. I don't like to call it a no-deal Brexit. It's really a free trade Brexit because it means that far from us having no deal, we will be trading with the European on World Trade Organization free trade terms. And, whilst these may not have a lot of the niceties of a specially crafted deal, we trade under World Trade Organization deal terms with a very large number of other nation states around the world, and we trade quite happily with those, so there's no reason why we couldn't trade quite happily with the European Union. A lot of people actually that I've been encountering just recently have been saying that they're very worried about the outcome of all of this, and I tend to think that the outcome in terms of how it's going to immediately affect the members of the public isn't going to be particularly bad one way or the other. Obviously, there is going to be there are going to be some political consequences of the negotiations and the agreement that she reached, but in terms of the immediate impact on the public, I don't think people need to panic. I think that the actual passing of May the 29th, when we're due to leave the European Union, the actual passing of that date will be a bit like the 31st of December 1999 with the Millennium Bug, but everybody's going to expect that the very next morning the whole sky is going to fall in on us and all manner of Horrible things are going to happen, but I rather suspect that in reality, nothing particularly eventful will actually happen the following day. And nothing particularly eventful will happen for quite some time. I mean, part of as part of our exit from the European Union, we've passed the great the repeal bill. The great repeal bill has been passed, whereby we've actually taken all of our we've actually removed all European Union legislation that's been imposed upon us from Brussels. But in reality, what we've also done at the same time, Conservative government have also implemented into British law all of the provisions that had previously been imposed upon us by the European Union. So whilst these provisions, if we have a so-called no-deal Brexit, won't actually be enforced by the European Union, they actually will be enforced by British law. And so prior to the 29th of May, we will be making our cars, and we'll be making televisions and refrigerators and all sorts of other finished goods that we'll be exporting under regulations that are going to be identical to the regulations that have existed for some time within the European Union and that will still exist within the European Union. So somebody from France, for example, who wants to buy a car manufactured in Britain will know that it's been manufactured in accordance with the standards that would be expected of a car manufactured anywhere else in Europe, anywhere else in the European Union, that is. And they'll be quite happy to do that the day before Brexit. And the day after Brexit, nothing will have changed. The same rules and regulations will still apply to cars manufactured in each country. And so somebody from France should be just as happy the day after to buy a car. And so it's going to be pretty much a storm in a teacup, in my view. Obviously, the moment a no-deal Brexit is announced, should that actually happen, I think stock markets in this country will probably go bonkers for a month or so. But then everything will settle down once everybody realises that life is going to go on, because we want to trade with Europe. Europe wants to trade with us, and it's in our interest to trade with them, and it's in their interest to trade with us. So come what may, the business people, the merchants and the traders will find a way of doing business, and as I say, life will pretty much carry on as normal.
Yeah, I'm amazed that they didn't just do that in the first place. They really should have just moved straight on to World Trade Organization rules and just continue to trade. And I think that's what the markets were expecting to happen. That's what everybody was expecting to happen when they voted to leave the EU. We all thought we were going to be leaving the very next day. And I think what she's done is she's prevaricated for the last 2 years. She's sort of just been sort of trying to bide her time, basically, and use up the 2 years until now so that she could do these backroom deals with the European Union in order to basically keep us in there in all that name. That's what it is, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's definitely the case. And if you think about it, it's the uncertainty that's existed for the last 2 years that has damaged industry both in this country and in Europe, because uncertainty is the worst thing for the manufacturing industry. And the way to have removed any uncertainty would have been for us to have just given 3 months' notice, gone on to World Trade Organization rules. Everybody would have known what the rules were going to be. There would have only been 3 months of uncertainty, and at the end of that 3 months, we would have been trading, and then we could, over the months and years that followed, we could then negotiate better terms if those terms were available from the European Union. And I'm sure they would have been. I'm sure that the European Union, had we done that, would have fallen over themselves to come back to us and would have made accommodations so that we could carry on trading with them. And there would have been none of this uncertainty that's been damaging our industry and industry in Europe for 2 years now. And it's a great shame that those 2 years have been wasted just in order for the European Union and those within the Conservative Party who really secretly wanted us to remain within the European Union, for them to have made structured a campaign of disillusionment, which is what I think it basically is. You know, there was a tremendous spirit for Brexit immediately after the referendum. And what's happened is that over the last 2 years or so, there's been this constant campaign of negative grit that's been specifically designed to make even those people who are firm supporters of Brexit, even those people begin to doubt whether it's actually all worthwhile. And that's what they're hoping for, to make the general public doubt that it's worth fighting for, to make people feel defeatist, make them think that nothing we do will actually ever get us through this period of kind of slug and malaise, and so that once they have completely, I'm going to use a technical term here, once they've completely buggered up Brexit, they can then come back to the British public and say, oh yeah, we want to have a second people's referendum, people's vote, in order to, and in the hope that people will be so sick and tired of what's been going on over the last 2 years that they will just roll over and vote to stay where we are. And that's obviously what they're hoping for, but hopefully people are, will be stronger. People will see through what's going on, and we will stick to our guns. And if Brexit doesn't take place in the way that it was promised, in the way that it should have been, then I think that there should be a well deserved public outcry. I hope that there are demonstrations, and I hope that the public express their righteous anger at what the Conservative Party have done, and bring the Conservative Party down, and force the issues that we have to go through with Brexit in the end.
Well, I've been reading today that there have been suggestions of having a national government and having a coalition between Conservative and Labour. What you're saying there about them, just trying to scare everybody and grind everybody down, and hopefully people will see through it. I do think people did see through it when they tried that before the referendum, when they tried to scare everybody about what was going to happen, and people didn't pay any attention to it, and we voted to leave. And what they've been doing now is they've been trying to scare everybody with what they call the no-deal Brexit, which is basically just World Trade Organization terms Brexit. But they've made a big effort in saying that is the no deal, and no deal is going to be absolutely awful. And now they're saying, well, it's a choice between Theresa May's Brexit or this terrible no deal that nobody wants, or we could have the people's vote. And this is the other thing that they've been pushing, this idea of something called a people's vote, which completely dehumanizes everybody that voted for Brexit, saying as if they weren't people. Yes. It wasn't people that voted. It was all nasty racists and Nazis and white supremacists that voted for Brexit. So now we want to have a vote that doesn't include them. That's what it seems like to me, is as if it's, it's just offensive, because it wasn't all racists and Nazis and white supremacists that voted for Brexit. It was people that wanted their sovereignty back, people that have sympathies with white supremacism and all the rest of it. Well, yes, they voted for Brexit, but also lots of other people did as well. Unless they're saying that 17 million people in Britain are white supremacists, then that's not true. I would love that to be true, but somehow I don't think it is. I think we're actually in the minority. And they've been saying that since this Brexit, all the far right have been emboldened. But when you actually look at it, the far right haven't been emboldened. UKIP had 12% of the vote, I believe, until the Brexit vote. And now they've got about 1% of the vote. If you look at how well the BNP were doing before the Brexit vote, they were doing a lot better. All the nationalist parties really haven't done very well at all since Brexit. And yet they've been saying that the far right have been emboldened by this. And that just isn't what has happened. It's the far left that have been emboldened.
I think the majority of the public instinctively know that they may not be able to rationalise it, they may not be able to put it into words, but I think the majority of the public instinctively know that our government is corrupt right to the very heart of it. And that something serious needs to be done. I think that was one of the reasons why a lot of people voted for Brexit, because they knew that it was throwing a spanner in the works of the political parties and the political establishment that have been leading us down a road towards national ruin probably for the last 5 or 6 decades, and people just, you know, wanted to express their dissatisfaction with what's been going on. And so, you know, people voted for Brexit in the hope that it would cause a sort of a major shock to the political system, and that hope, you know, in the vain hope that something would happen and that we would acquire new leadership that would then be patriotic, that would then have the best interests of the British people at heart, and would lead us out of the death grip that the European Union has us in. I mean, we've only got to see how difficult it is, how many impediments have been put in the way, how much denigration has been aimed at British politicians from the European Union, to see just what sort of an organisation it is. It's the sort of an organisation that blackmails and bullies the member states to stay within it. Now, that's not a free association of nations. That is an autocratic state. That is an anti-democratic system. That is a tyranny. In fact, it's a tyranny that's imposing itself on all of the individual nations of Europe, and we've just got to break free from that tyranny. You know, I've said so many times before that the European Union, the constitution of the European Union is not based upon the British constitution, and you would have thought if you were going to be designing a new new sort of supranational super state that's going to be a democracy, that you would choose the mother of all democracies as the model for your democratic system. But no, they didn't do that. Or you thought that they would have perhaps chosen the democratic system that has successfully existed within the largest democracy in the West, which is the United States. But no, they didn't do that. They chose to model the constitution of the European Union on the constitution of the Soviet Union, and just purely because the Soviet Union's constitution is a constitution that appears to be democratic, but in reality is a tyranny. And that's why, you know, what the European Union has become, it's become a tyranny, and they can't bear to think that any individual member state has had the gall to actually try to escape from their clutches. And that's why the deal that's been offered to us, and the deal that Theresa May has agreed to, is one which creates, through this Irish backstop situation, creates a mechanism by which the European Union can keep us tied to them forever if they want to. And we've only got to see how quickly the Prime Minister of Spain, and how quickly the French leader have jumped to say, you know, how they're going to use this Irish backstop as a method of blackmailing Britain into agreeing to all sorts of things that are in the interests of their nations. You know, see how quickly they've done that, to see that that's exactly what this backstop has been created in order to do. And I just think it's terrible. I think that, you know, what we need is we need a leader to come forward who will just go back to Brussels and just say, I'm ever so sorry, you know, but we're not going to be browbeaten like this. We're not going to be blackmailed in the way we try to blackmail us. And, you know, we're going to be leaving the European Union. You know, now we're in a situation where we're only a few months away from the 29th of May, and we can just turn around and say that, you know, on the 29th of May, with or without a good agreement, we're going to be leaving, and we'll trade you on all trade organisation terms. And if you don't like that, then you've got a very short space of time now between now and then to actually ask us on what terms we're prepared to continue trading with you. If we did that, then we could walk away from the whole thing. And I think the spirit of people in this country is such that, you know, even if there was an economic downturn in the short term, people would regard that as being a price worth paying in order to secure our national freedom. When you consider that our parents' generations, you know, had to fight during the Second World War, had to fight during the First World War to maintain the freedom of this country, you know, all we have to do is to be steadfast to the Brexit decision, and weather a few months of economic downturn. That's all we've got to do in order to secure the our children and our children's future, and that's what we should be prepared to do. I was interested actually when I was listening to, you know, I've likened the scare tactics that have been used over, you know, what they call the No Deal Brexit, or which is basically a free trade Brexit. That the sort of scare tactics that have been used have actually been, are exactly the same as the kind of scare stories that were going around with regard to the Millennium Bug, back in 1999. And I was listening to, I think it was Desert Island Discs on the radio a few weeks back, and I think it was Margaret Beckett that was on there, and she was talking about how she was made the Minister for the Millennium Bug, and how there were all these dire predictions that computers couldn't cope with the year 2000, and they were all going to go crashing, and that all of our sort of control systems for industry and commerce were going to go crashing, and that that whole world would be thrown into a state of chaos. But she was made the Millennium Bug, and she was given a special phone that she had to carry around with her, that way she could get instant access to the Prime Minister, instant access to the President of the United States, and she had to have this whole entourage of flunkies and bodyguards to follow her around on the Millennium Eve to make sure nothing could happen to her, to, you know, stop her from being able to defend the country against the Millennium Bug. And then the whole evening went through and there was nothing. And then the following morning, everybody woke up, the computer still worked, the telephone still worked, all the control systems throughout industry and commerce still worked. It was just all a big scare about nothing. And I think that the scares are putting out about a free trade Brexit, or a no deal Brexit, as they like to call it, to make it a negative connotation, all those scares will be shown to be nothing. And in 12 months' time, if we go through with, stick to our guns and go through with a no deal Brexit in the absence of any better deal offered to us, then we'll look back and we'll laugh at just how silly this whole situation has been.
Yeah, it's going to be a total anticlimax. How did you bring up the backstop there, which seems to get talked about a lot? And basically, what it means is that Northern Ireland will still remain a part of the European Union. It may not be in name, but effectively, that will be the customs area will go into Northern Ireland, which means separating Northern Ireland from the rest of the United Kingdom, which is exactly what they didn't want to happen. And this is what's so important about it. And they seem to have latched onto that and said, well, that's okay. We'll still call it a part of the UK, but it will actually be a part of the EU, and it could stay a part of the EU for forevermore, pretty much. They can keep extending the transference period over right up until 2098 and beyond. And once, while this is still in this transference period, the European Union have still got the say-so over all the rules. Only Great Britain doesn't even have a say-so. We've only got very, very little say-so at the moment. It's really just window dressing. But what this deal means, the Theresa May's deal means, is that we're stuck with it. And we have to continue obeying them. What else do you think about this backstop, Max? Sorry, go on.
Well, the theory is, if we have a hard border between north of Ireland and the south, that this will inflame the troubles of old, and that we'll have disruption. We'll have protests. We'll perhaps have even a return of terrorism in the form of, you know, IRA activity in Northern Ireland if we have this hard border. So effectively, what we're doing by going to such great lengths that we're prepared not just to keep Northern Ireland tied up with the European Union indefinitely, but the whole of the UK tied up with the European Union indefinitely, because we will, if this backstop comes into effect, it means that the whole of the UK will be subject to European Union regulation as part of a separate trading block, and effectively what we're doing is we're allowing the IRA to determine the future of the United Kingdom. You know, people laugh and sort of scoff cynically when Good Friday Agreement was achieved, and a lot of people said, well, the IRA didn't actually ever surrender, that they had just hidden their weapons and they just, the British government just backed down at every stop and turn along the way. And I think that's probably a fairly accurate assessment of what actually did take place. And now we're so scared of a resumption of Northern Irish terrorism on the part of the IRA, that we're prepared to allow Britain to be indefinitely enslaved as a kind of, Boris Johnson describes it, as a kind of slave state to the European Union. And that's just the most shocking thing ever, if you think about it.
Well, we're also going to have a customs partnership. They're calling it a customs partnership, but not a customs union, which basically, or that's what she promised that we'd have a customs partnership but not a customs union. But what we've actually got is a single customs territory, which doesn't allow the United Kingdom to set its own tariffs on goods. So it will still be the EU setting the tariffs on the goods. And she's also promised that there'll be an end to vast annual payments. But apparently we're going to honour all our commitments to the current EU budget, meaning that none of the member states will have to fill the gap when Britain goes, and that will continue for as long as the transition period goes on for. So we're still going to be paying in the money. We don't get to say what the tariffs are going to be on the goods, and we're still a part of the single customs territory. We're still a part of the EU, basically. And she's saying, oh no, this is real Brexit. This is really leaving the European Union. Everything that she promised, she's actually gone back on, and she won't admit it. She keeps saying that this is the only deal, this has given us this, this has given us that. And then as soon as you look at it, she hasn't given us this or that at all. And she's refusing to step down. I really think that she is just doing what the European Union have told her to do, and to ignore what any of her politicians say, ignore what the public say, and just stay there and call the bluff of the British government as to whether they will tell her she has to step down or not. I think it's really got that far.
Yeah, I think so. I think when you consider the way that the referendum went against what the government wanted, the fact that none of the senior members of the Conservative Party actually wanted to be the Prime Minister sufficiently to actually seize the position. I mean, what really ought to have happened? Because even those members of the Conservative Party that campaigned for Brexit, they weren't people who had previously been critics of the European Union. So what you had was, as the referendum came round, you had various people like Michael Gove and Boris Johnson, who had never really spoken up critically against the European Union, suddenly becoming the most enthusiastic advocates for Brexit. And so what we had in the Conservative Party were a group of people, most of which had never made any kind of criticisms of the European Union, divided into two, one side deciding that they were going to carry on campaigning against Brexit, and the other side deciding that they were going to assume the leadership of the pro-Brexit group. And then none of the people who had assumed the leadership of the pro-Brexit group actually came through at the end to take the leadership of the Conservative Party. We all fell at the final hurdle, and Theresa May, who was somebody who actually campaigned against Brexit, became the Prime Minister, who was then given the task of negotiating our exit from the European Union. And there was a school of thought that this was all done deliberately. There was a school of thought that Theresa May has deliberately bungled the European Union, or did the negotiations with the European Union, in order to confound the public's wish to leave the European Union, and there's a lot of evidence to support that point of view, and it would surprise me if that actually was true, and I think that we've got to the point now where the public at large need to realise that if we're going to really get out of the European Union and make a success of it, then we need to have people who've been anti the European Union from day one. And we need those people to be leading any negotiations that we have with the European Union. And we need those people to be leading the country once we leave the European Union, because it's only you can't have somebody in charge of a project who whose heart doesn't actually approve of that project, whose heart isn't with that project. You've got to have, you know, people have got to believe in it to make it work. And if people don't really believe in it, if they just are either, you know, pretending to go through it out of a sense of duty, because, even though they don't really like it, or if they are people who are cunningly pretending that they want to bring about Brexit, but in reality don't, you know, whatever it is, either of those two options, then that's just not good enough. We've got to have people that believe in Brexit, that believe that the British people can again become independent. You know, prior to the mid-70s, when we went into the European Union, we had been an independent nation for thousands of years. You know, we've been able to make our way, we've been able to grow enough food to feed our people, we've been able to trade sufficiently with other countries in order to be a profitable nation. We had enough brains to be a successful nation with science, technology that rivaled any other country, and there's no reason why we can't do that again. It's just simply a matter of political will. And at the moment, the people that are at the top of our country are people who just totally lack that political will. Those that are, you know, using Brexit to try and advance their careers are exactly that, just using Brexit to try and advance their careers. If that wasn't so, then they would have been campaigning against our membership of the European Union years ago, not just 2 years ago, but 10 years ago and 20 years ago, they would have been campaigning against it. Because nothing significant has changed within the European Union over the last 20 years to make it suddenly worse than it used to be. You know, it's always been a tyranny. It's always been an organisation that's bullied the member states, and we've just got to get out of it. And we just need somebody to lead us out of it.
I think she's wanted the negotiations to fail right from the start. She wants it to fail because she wants to be proved right that we should have stayed there with the EU. And what you're saying there, Max, about how we should have had somebody that campaigned to leave, that's exactly what David Cameron said when he stepped down. That's the reason why he stepped down. He said, I'm going to have to step down because the country now needs to be led by somebody that campaigned for Brexit. Since we're going to be leaving the European Union, the country needs to be led by somebody that wanted to leave the European Union. And then they put forward Theresa May, who I think they had deliberately just sort of stood on the sidelines, didn't really do much campaigning to stay and didn't really do much campaigning to leave. I think she was their fallback plan. She was being very clever in doing that, really, so that she could appear as if she wasn't too for the European Union and not for to leave it. And then they could position her to take the role as Prime Minister, where she's then done all these backroom deals. And she has done backroom deals. She's gone over the heads of her own Brexit secretary, her own Brexit cabinet. Don't forget, the first Brexit cabinet resigned when Theresa May put this deal in front of all of them at Chequers, because it was nothing that they'd been working on. All this time, the Brexit cabinet or the Brexit secretary and his team, they'd been working on the deal that they were going to put to the EU, and Theresa May just went straight over their heads with her own deal. And they both resigned. And then we had a new Brexit secretary, and now the new Brexit secretary has resigned once she made this deal public. So it's quite clear that she's just been working to her own agenda, not paying any attention to the people that wanted to leave, all the work that they had done. I mean, I would be really, really, upset and have my nose put out of joint if I'd been working on this deal all this time only to have, the boss completely overlook everything that I did. It was just as if it was saying, well, this is just to fool the public into thinking that we really mean to do this. That's how it appeared to me. What they should have done is they should have got somebody like Nigel Farage and said, right, well, he's going to be our advisor. He's going to be our negotiator. And they could have said to him, well, you're the guy that got us into this. You're the guy that's been campaigning for this. It's all yours. You deal with the negotiations. And everybody would have been happy then. You know, the leavers would have said, well, okay, he's going to get the best deal. He knows what he's doing. And the people that had voted to leave, of course we would have said, well, he's going to get us the best deal. He was a man perfectly situated to do that. And instead of that, they alienated him. They totally alienated him. Even when he went over to congratulate Donald Trump on Donald Trump's inauguration, straight away they were saying he cannot have any official role between Britain and America. It's like they've done everything they can to harm Britain's interests.
Yes, I think Nigel Farage really let the side down a bit when he resigned as leader of the of UKIP upon a successful Brexit campaign, because he kind of was too confident that others would then follow through and deliver a Brexit, and he should have known that that people wouldn't do that, and he should have stayed in place so that he could, at the head of a party which had quite a substantial following within the nation at that point, he should have stuck to his guns and made sure that Brexit went through and made himself available and campaigned, insisting that he be involved in the negotiations. And so I think it was a poor decision on his part to step down, because by stepping down he gave the impression that UKIP's work was done, and so naturally the support for UKIP fell away, as people thought, well, okay, we can sort of go back to normal now, but UKIP's not needed any longer, and the establishment in this country have taken advantage of the fact that there is no organisation such as UKIP was immediately after the referendum result that could be used to keep their feet to the fire, so to speak, to make sure that they delivered on the vote that the British public had made.
Yeah, you know, a large part of it as well was that we wanted to see an end to immigration. This was a proxy vote. That's what it was. The British people, we only live on a small island. You can't keep filling the island up with new people. You can't keep building over the Greenbelt land. The hospitals are overflowing. The schools are overflowing. The crime rate in the cities has gone through the roof. And the British public saw this as a proxy vote to try and put a stop to this. Because a lot of it is down to the free movement. It's down to this Eurozone, this Schengen zone, where anybody that comes into Europe can just go wherever they like in Europe, which doesn't just mean that Europeans can do that. It means that if anyone can break into Europe, they can then just make use of the Schengen zone, because there's no border checks. So a large part of this vote, a large part of the Brexit vote, was to put a stop to this free movement. And again, this is another thing that Theresa May promised. She promised that there would be an end to free movement into Britain. And apparently she's gone back on that as well. Apparently the 3 million or so EU nationals that are living in Britain, they'll be able to claim settled status, residence in the UK, retaining all the rights they had before Brexit. They will just have to register with the Home Office. And right up until the end of the transition period, which can be extended right up to 2098, they'll still be able to claim settled status, even if they're here for another 5 years. And they'll also be able to bring in all their family reunion rights. They'll be able to bring in their foreign spouses. They'll be able to claim all the benefits for children here or children living abroad. And obviously this is EU nationals, but I think they're deliberately not saying anything about people that come in from outside of the EU, because they'll probably be given the same. There's nothing that's been said about this. This was a proxy, as I say, this was a proxy against immigration, and we know that the EU is to do with the EU immigration, but they're not even doing anything about that. Nothing about that. And she's been over to Africa, doing deals with Africa, making a big point of doing that. Well, we can do a trade deal with Africa. Who wants to do a trade deal with Africa? They receive all our foreign aid. I mean, they're not producing anything we want, are they?
No. And I think that, you're pretty much hit the nail on the head there, which I think that, much as we don't want the UK jobs market flooded by lots of European people, I think that as far as the majority of British people are concerned, if there is going to have to be immigration into Britain, if there's going to be immigration of one sort or another, we'd far prefer it to be immigration from Europe than immigration from outside of Europe. And so, one of the areas in which the desire of the British public not to have our country turned into a foreign country, one of the ways in which that's been frustrated is that if there was that free and open debate upon about immigration and about race in this country, what would happen is that the vast majority of people would vote for Britain to remain a white country and for any future immigration to come from European countries, so that at least the people that come are of the same racial stock and can therefore assimilate into the British people over time. And yet what's the end result of either the May's negotiations or the end result that they actually seem to aim for with their negotiations is to stop any immigration into Britain from Europe and to replace it with immigration into Britain from the Third World, where it will be predominantly people who are, from an ethnic standpoint, from a racial standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, poles apart from the British people, in which case it's not really what the British people wanted.
Yeah, they also got this UN Migration Pact, which I don't know. Well, I'm hoping that Britain are not going to sign up to it. I mean, that just basically says that anyone from anywhere in the world can go to wherever they like, and it does away with all borders. America has refused to sign it. Hungary's refused to sign it. Italy have refused to sign it. Austria have refused to sign it. France and Britain really aren't saying anything about it. I mean, there's nothing about that in here. And if she's opening up Britain to Africa and Turkey, I wouldn't put it past her just to do that, to just to get our own back on the British people for voting in the wrong way. I mean, the Labour Party said that they wanted to rub the right's nose in it. That was their exact language, I think, Jack Straw, about immigration. They wanted to rub the right's nose in it by opening up the borders. And I think she's going to try to punish the British people for voting in this way. I mean, one of the funniest things in all of this, I mean, it's not really funny. I mean, it's absolutely tragic what's going on here. But part of it was the British fisheries and the fishermen. And the British fishermen are being told that they have quotas of fish. So when they haul their net in and it's filled with fish that are all sort of flapping about and dying, they have to throw 3/4 of them back because they've already caught their quota. So all this fish is just wasted. They could have been sold, but because they've got their quota, they've got to throw them back. So there was a big push to get control of our waters back. And she promised that she would get control of our waters back. This was a really, really big thing. And she hasn't. She hasn't got control of our waters back. Britain is going to remain in the common fisheries policy during the whole of the transition period, with the European Union setting and enforcing quota limits on fish. So it's still going to be the EU that are running that. And when she brought Amber Rudd back in, because Amber Rudd is now back in the government after resigning from Home Secretary, she's back in there. And the first thing Amber Rudd said was, oh, I'm really looking forward to this because I'm the MP for Grimsby and it's full of fishermen. And Mrs May has promised that we're going to have our waters back and control over the fisheries. And she obviously hadn't actually looked at it because the EU are going to be setting all of that. And talk about putting your foot in your mouth when she said that. We've got regulatory standards here as well. Go on, Max.
I think that the deal that's been done has been, it is the worst possible deal. And Theresa May began her campaign by saying that Brexit means Brexit and a no deal is better than a bad deal. And now she's saying that any deal is better than no deal. And that's the situation that we find ourselves in. And that's why it's such a deplorable mess, the whole thing, really.
I tell you what, Max, I bet the World Trade Organization trade deals, I bet that doesn't include free movement. You know, she's desperate that we don't go for the World Trade Organization rules. And they've been pushing that from the start. Oh, this is no deal. We can't possibly have no deal. We can't possibly have World Trade Organization rules. I bet World Trade Organization rules does not include the free movement of people alongside trade. Because that isn't the deal that the rest of the world has, is it?
And the government has been talking about the possibility of us making trade deals with India if we left the European Union. And then in the reports of the negotiations that are sort of the prelude to those trade deals, it's been made apparent that India will insist that we relax our immigration quotas with regard to Indian nationals wanting to come and live and work in the UK. And this is regarded as, you know, perfectly acceptable, when in reality it sort of again flies in the face of the Brexit vote, where, you know, one of the main motivating factors amongst people that voted to leave the European Union was the desire to keep this country a white country, and a country that maintains its traditions, and immigration from India will be entirely contrary to that.
Well, if you look at any of these multicultural initiatives, I mean, they're never of a high standard. When you hear of British companies that have been taken over by Indian companies, what is made is always of a substandard. And I think what happens a lot of the time when we hear of these military accidents that are going on, it's because there's been diversity hires, diversity quotas that have been put in place, so that you've actually got people with a low IQ doing jobs that require a very high standard and a high IQ. So all that will mean is just a lowering in standards. I mean, people would prefer to buy products that are produced by their own people. We used to be really, really proud of stuff that was made in Britain. Same with America. America's very proud of what was made in America. That's what Donald Trump is trying to push now. But all that's going on here is there's going to be a lowering of standards. In fact, the regulatory standards are just going to be kept the same, in line with the European Union. And they've made a legal commitment to do that, to keep applying the European Union regulatory standards, which we know some of them have been put in place just to make life hard for British producers. You're going to have quotas still on the milk. You're going to have everything that is wrong about the European Union. We're still going to have. We're still going to have all the red tape. We're still going to have to go to... we're still going to have the European courts telling us what our rulings should be. And you can't look to the European courts to uphold human rights. They have this very nice sounding bit about free speech and the transfer of ideas across borders, and nobody can stop people talking to one another. And yet they're the ones that are really pushing to silence anybody criticizing immigration or criticizing Islam. Criticizing any of these new ideas that they have that we're not allowed to criticize, things that people wouldn't have had any problem criticizing before that are now seen as blasphemy, the equivalent of new blasphemy laws when you speak up against the European Union, or you speak up against immigration, or you question the Holocaust, or you question the amount of Jews that are involved in government. All of these things we're not allowed to talk about anymore. According to the European Union Declaration of Human Rights, that's all supposed to be enshrined into law, that we have free speech. And then they have this little clause, but not including what the government doesn't want you to talk about. And this takes us back to what you were saying at the beginning there, Max, that the whole constitution of the European Union was based on the Soviet Union. I am quite bowled over by that. Quite bowled over by that. After the war, that they would then build the European Union on the basis of the Soviet Union, after we're supposedly in a Cold War with them, after everything that went on, the millions of people that were massacred, the same with China, millions of people massacred over in China, and then they choose to build the European Union on the same foundations as the Soviet Union. Unbelievable.
That's right. And in the opening sort of passages of the Treaty on the European Union, the so-called composite treaty on the European Union. It states there sort of very grandly that the European Union and all of its member states exist to uphold, you know, words to the effect that they exist to uphold freedom and democracy. And in reality, it's a complete opposite. You know, the European Union doesn't uphold freedom and democracy. It is, you know, quite obviously, as I said before, a tyranny. And we've just got to get out of it. You know, some people within nationalism have, you know, got this idea of Europe as a nation, and I don't scorn that idea, but because they have this idea of Europe as a nation, they want us to remain within the European Union, but it's not the idea of being in partnership with other European countries that's the issue here. The issue is the fact that the European Union is run by unelected bureaucrats who operate a corrupt tyranny, and that's what we've got to get away from. We've just got to get out of that, because otherwise we might just as well have surrendered to the Soviet Union and allowed the Soviet Union to establish a union of Soviet socialist republics across the whole of Europe.
A nationalist partnership would be wonderful. A nationalist partnership that was all dedicated to a constitution of the 14 words. Preserving the white race and encouraging our prosperity. That would be brilliant. And we could all work together, and that's what a real union of European nations should be about. Anyway, Max, we've gone a little bit over time here. Sorry, listeners, it's a little bit shorter today, but thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next Monday with more Aryan Britannia for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
To the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.